time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them at Ocean View Road, Onirua. Last Saturday, Jan Scott talked about New Zealand music to her first three guests, Graham Hooper, Rosalie Hennigan from Waiheke Library, and composer Helen Bowater. She also talked to Denise Roach and Steve from Waiheke United Associated Football Club.
And we have a very special guest who's just popped in to talk about the free concert at the Rux this afternoon, and this is Graham Hooper. Welcome, Graham.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, tell us something about the what's happening today at the Rux.
There's three bands from Auckland coming over, Vent, Green Screen and Long Story Short. Now, Long Story Short features two sisters, Jasmine and Danny Plowes, 16 and 17 year olds. They played at the Acoustic Cafe as the band Dangerous Jacket, or duo Dangerous Jacket. This band is a bit heavier, a bit rockier, and they won 2009 Smoke Free Rock Quest for the North Shore, and they've done really, really well.
Right, and you've brought a CD along.
Just to give you an idea of what sort of music they play. Good rocking little band, but they've been sponsored by Fuller's, who paid for their ferry trips over and the bus to the Rux this afternoon. They're playing at between 3 and 6:30, I think it is.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, what will the first track be that we'll listen to? Track one.
This first track is Never Had a Tender Moment.
Righty ho, here we go.
To the bone, I've got you across the phone. You like this parasite, you're never gonna let go. Now I'm going to ascend without sounding desperate. A broken record. I just hate to be around to see you drown. When I
Right, now that was a track from Jasmine and Danny, two sisters who are part of a group that are playing this afternoon at a free concert at the Rocks. They're called Long Story Short, and in just a moment we'll have another track from those two, which is from quite a different, more laid back angle. Graham, tell us something more about this free concert.
Well, I went and saw the two sisters at Acoustic Cafe one night down at Nourish. They were under a duo called Dangerous Jacket, and I was really, really impressed with their songwriting skills and their performance, and spoke to their dad, and he says, well, they're in another band. And I said, well, you know, it'd be like, good to see them on the island. So it worked out really well that they were able to come back over to the island, and they've brought two other bands with them from the Auckland School of Music, or Auckland School of Rock.
Now, tell us something about the Auckland School of Rock. I'd never heard of such a thing.
Nor had I. Well, it's just like a training ground for these young, talented groups. And it gives them an idea of what to do when they're on stage as far as their music goes, and the monitor sound and stage presence, performance. So it just improves them.
And who's behind that?
I'm not sure of all the people. I think, let's have a look here. Gareth Moore is the main guy that I know behind it, and AD from Waikiki Island, Dr. Rock.
Oh, right.
Dr. Music. Yes, he's involved with the sound systems.
That sounds brilliant for young people starting out, getting some experience and knowing how to deal with it.
Yeah, well, I think anyone going this afternoon will be quite impressed with the performance of these three bands, plus Feigned Innocence from Waikiki Island are playing as well.
Excellent, and it starts at 3?
3 o'clock, yep.
Free entry?
Yeah, or although Koha has asked, you know, if people can donate some money because they've got the other bits and pieces to pay for, but Fuller's paid for the ferry fare and bus fare to the Rocks.
Oh, that's
Rocks.
Excellent.
That's great.
And this is all part of the New Zealand Music Month promotion.
That's correct, yes.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's listen to Ever So Slightly.
Little birdie, do you see me? I'm trying to explain myself, but I don't make much sense anymore. 1,000 miles away, and I can make it rain in California. About me all night long by your nails over my name. And saggy that when I play only to you.
little birdie, do you see me? I'm trying to explain myself, but I don't like myself anymore. Thousand miles away, and I can make it rain in California. Little birdie, do you see me? I'm trying to explain myself, but I don't like myself anymore. Thousand miles away, and I can make it rain in California. Little birdie, do you see me? I'm trying to explain myself, but I don't have a luck anymore. Thousand miles away, and I can make it rain in California. Miles away, I can make it rain in California. A thousand miles away, I can make it rain in California.
Now that was the sisters Jasmine and Dani, who were playing as Disaster Jacket. They're going to be playing this afternoon at a free concert at the Rocks, and you're most welcome to go along. They're not the only ones that are playing. There's a few others out there. And thank you very much, Graham Hooper, for coming in to give us those tracks to play and to tell us something about this afternoon. Thank you, Graham. And it's my pleasure to say hi to Rosalie from the library. Hi, Rosalie.
Hi, Jan, and good morning, everyone, and another beautiful morning. And I had 2 mils of rain last night. Woohoo!
That's brilliant. Hey, I think
not enough, but it's a start.
Somebody was doing rain dancing, and that's obviously worked. That's brilliant. Now, you've come to talk to us about New Zealand Music Month, which may sound a bit odd for a library, but the library's really getting in behind it, isn't it?
Oh, yes, because we have CDs, and the New Zealand groups are very, very popular. And I think it's right and proper that we celebrate New Zealand Book Month, and we have New Zealand Post, and we have New Zealand Music Month. So you can maybe able to hear just in the background the sounds of Chocolate Fish warming up, because they're going to be playing outside the library at 11 o'clock today. So 1st of May, I didn't say White Rabbits until I'd spoken to lots of people. I suddenly thought, why do we say White Rabbits? I'll have to look it up.
That's a very good idea.
And then on the 8th of May, that's next week, we have the Waiheke High School Choir Singers. That'll be wonderful. I think they go called Cantata Isolo. It means sing the island, mm-hmm. which is very appropriate. And the 15th of May, we have the Secret Knocks. That's Greg Minter and Manuel Kahura. The 22nd of May, we have the Sister Shark Quartet. I mean, these groups are so good. They're so brilliant. And they're coming along and giving us a free concert just to celebrate New Zealand Music Month. And the 29th of May, we've got an eclectic variety of psaltery, mandolin and dulcet, which sounds quite old, but it's going to be presented in a new way.
I think those are all instruments that they've got at Whittaker, so maybe they're loaning them for the purpose.
I'm sure, yes.
That should be interesting. That's great. So apart from the music, have you got some books to go with it as well?
Of course, I have. And one that I picked up that I have to admit somebody else ordered in, and I thought, oh, classical Chinese poetry. Now, I have to say, I'm not a great poetry fan. Just now and again, I'll look at some poetry and admire it and really be touched by it. But I don't possess it the way I do ordinary novel reading or non-fiction reading. And to pick up this book, and I just opened it up a stray page, and I read this poem, and it was about the creaking carts going off to war and the desolation of the people and the village. And I thought, my God, that's as modern as today, except for the creaking carts, but possibly over in Afghanistan they do have creaking carts. And it just rang shivers through me, you know, because it was just so emotive and so beautifully distilled. And I looked, and it was written in the 6th century BC, and I thought, for goodness sake.
Wow.
So I'm really getting into classical Chinese poetry. The anthology has been translated and edited by David Hinton, who apparently is a well-known Chinese English scholar. So that's one book I'm actually thinking of buying, which is something. I used to buy lots and lots of books, but then when I became very conscious of what the library could do, I more or less stopped that. And so That's something different for poetry lovers. Classical Chinese poetry, I can give it 10 out of 10. Now, another book, a novel this time, that I can give 9 out of 10 is Swan Thieves by Elizabeth Kostova. I was immediately attracted because she wrote a book that I thought was quite different, The Historian, in which she does, has a history student following Dracula. And so I thought, well, she's got quite a different twist. Well, as I say, Swan Thieves is about, starts off with this psychiatrist, and he sounds very dull and monotone, but the character is brought in as he lands an artist who has been imprisoned and given over to psychiatric care because he has lunged at a painting, a famous painting of the Swan Thieves. And so he gradually tracks this man's history and what has got him so upset. And that's riveting. So Swan Thieves by Elizabeth Kostova. It's a big book, but it's really fascinating. Our characters are just wonderful.
Be a good book to take away on holiday if you're yes, having a break.
Yes. Yeah. And now, from big to little, Mitch Albom, who wrote Tuesdays with Maury and The Five People You Meet in Heaven, little books he specialises in, so much wisdom distilled again. Have a Little Faith is his latest one. And in it, it's a non-fiction, he's asked to give a eulogy for a rabbi, and he says to the rabbi, well, you're still around, and he said, well, you have to get to know me, because this boy grew up with this rabbi as his pastor, and so he makes a point of visiting and getting to know him and reappreciating his own faith. And then, because he lives in Detroit, when he's not in Waiheke, I should add, Mitch Albom hears about this pastor for the homeless, because Detroit was a city which was ravaged by the car industry falling down. And so this guy is a pastor at a derelict church with holes in the roof and buckets and all the rest of it. And so he's been helping him. So it's these contrast of faith. So that's the title, Have a Little Faith by Mitch Albom, and I can have great joy in recommending him. Now, coming to back to New Zealand Post, which I know we've been talking about the last over the last month, the children's vote has closed yesterday. The winners will be announced on the 19th of May, and I'm just so glad I'm not a judge, because it would be so difficult to pick between them. This week, I'd like to bring to your attention Cry of the Taniwha by Des Hunt. And it starts at a period with a criminal act following a bank robber who wants to snatch these beautiful jewels. And then it goes into the Tararua eruption. And from there, it goes to the modern day. And these two boys, one of them has sort of wanting to be accepted by the gangs, and this other boy doesn't want to have anything to do with him, but his uncle asks him to take on this boy as a friendship thing. And I'm not going to say too much more, but jewels and skeletons and things that will greatly interest 10-year-olds up. The other one that I really thought is worthy of praise is End of the Alphabet by Fleur Beale. And it suggested 12 plus, but I really think I'm a little bit older than 12. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I think 10-year-olds, possibly even some 9-year-olds, because it's character-driven. The main character is this very good child, and she helps her mother, who's working mum, and she does the tea, and she does the washing up, and she does this. And she's got an older brother who says, oh, sure, mum, look, I've got to do my homework. And because the girl is the, inverted commas, dummy in the family, and her mother thinks that all she'll ever do is, you know, get a servile type of job and doesn't encourage her. And yet this kid is a brilliant genius at drawing, but she doesn't get much time to follow it up. Her love is fashion. And so she sort of does find her backbone, and her friend says to her, look, until you stop being a doormat for your family and that scungy big brother of yours, I'm going to stop going with you to the mall, and I'm going to stop being your friend. And her friend does this, and she's so hurt. And then she thinks, well, why is she doing this? She's been my good friend for so long. And she thinks, well, perhaps I am a doormat. And she starts observing her family and realising how her brother is manipulating the whole lot so that he doesn't do a thing. So she puts her foot down with both feet and says to her mother, who's a union delegate, "Sorry, Mum, I'm going on strike until my brother does his fair share." And it caused absolute ructions in the family. So it's a very... it's a book which I think all mothers will empathise with, all little girls will empathise with, and I think some boys could learn something from it too. It's not all charm and scholastic ability that gets you everywhere. So that's End of the Alphabet, part of the, by Fleur Beale, part of the New Zealand Book Month. I think I've run out of my time, but I could talk for hours.
Just one thing I was going to, just on a totally different subject. There's been quite a bit of publicity lately about the popularity of the girl with the dragon tattoo. Has that been happened here on
huge,
the island as well?
Absolutely huge. At one stage, I think we had over 1,490 odd people waiting for it.
On Waiheke?
No.
I mean, yes, but
that's
how about Waiheke?
I didn't actually... extrapolate the Waiheke figures, but they would have been numerous. I think a lot of people have been loaning it out among their friends, of course, because with that sort of a queue there is inevitably a waiting time. But I put my name on the list and I got it eventually, and I must admit, I was disappointed because I thought I was going to love it. And I sometimes think when you hear so much about a book, you expect it to be good. And it is good, don't get me wrong, it is good. But I didn't rave on about it the same way. It took me a while to get into it. And I thought the characterisation, you know, could have been improved a little. But this, once she got into the story, it was though in the first book, she was just finding her feet. And suddenly it started taking off, and I could see why people were interested. And I'll certainly read the next two and three when I'm, you know, eventually.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Rosalie. And everybody should get down to the library at 11 o'clock, which is only 16 minutes away, to listen to Chocolate Fish.
They are so good.
And every Saturday... for the month of May, there's something different on outside the library. Next week is the Waiheke High School Choir Singers. The week after, Secret Knox with Greg Minter and Manuel Kahura. 22nd is Sister Shout, and the 29th is an eclectic variety show with a psalter, a mandolin, and a dulcie tone. So that's where you go on a Saturday morning for the month of May.
Yes, do come along. It's absolutely wonderful. A free concert by these people who normally get paid for gigs, and it's just so good. Oh, and I should say that... the Chocolate Fish are hoping to launch ideas for their CD today too, so that's another thing that they've got coming up. So bravo.
Oh, that's great. Excellent.
And I should compliment the radio on playing so many good New Zealand radio Waiheke.
Thank you very much, Rosalie. We look forward to seeing you next month.
Bye-bye.
It's my pleasure now to say hello to Helen Bowater. Good morning, Helen.
Hi, Jen.
And welcome. Now, Helen, how long have you been on the island?
13 years.
13 years, right. And you came here from?
From Wellington.
From Wellington, okay. Now, Helen is one of our foremost composers. She's got quite a background. She studied with Jack Boddy, who's one of our number one classical composers. She's got a Bachelor of Music with Honours from Victoria University, and she specialised in music history and ethnomusicology. She's been resident composer at the Nelson School of Music and the University of Otago's Mozart Fellow. 1994, she was composer in residence with the Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra, and 2008 to 2009, she was the Creative New Zealand Jack C. Richards Composer in Residence at the New Zealand School of Music at Victoria University in Wellington. She's had works commissioned by the Edinburgh Contemporary Arts Trust and the Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra, and her compositions have been played not only by our own NZSO but also by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and the Hebrides Ensemble, to name just a few. Yes, because Helen, you've had commissions from China and all sorts of places, haven't you? Or Japan, or somewhere in the east there?
Recently I've been to a contemporary music festival in Jogja in Indonesia, but they were playing pieces already made, already created. Right. And then I went to, I was invited to World Music Days with last November in Beijing, where the 25 New Zealand artists, and I was lucky to go. I was lucky to go because of was unlucky circumstances, because of the Samoa tsunami. A Samoan dancer had to pull out and went back to help in Samoa, so I was rung up and asked to go. So 25 of us went there and had a piece played at the World Music Days.
Excellent. Well, that's great.
That was a really, really, really stunning experience going to China. And then after World Music Days, I went with two other composers down to Yunnan in South China, and we toured around interviewing actually traditional Chinese musicians and interviewing them and recording their music and things. It was quite a stunning experience.
That's great. I wasn't too sure whether classical music featured in New Zealand Music Month, but I noticed that the concert programme of Radio New Zealand is highlighting Alfred Hill this week. It's interesting to note they're claiming him as a New Zealand composer, although he was born in Australia. But does Music Month impact at all on the classical scene in New Zealand generally?
Yes, a lot. There are a lot of different concerts and things. If people want to go to the Sound Centre of New Zealand website, they can see what's happening in New Zealand in the classical music realms. And there's a lot happening.
Oh, that's great.
I've got, for instance, next week, for instance, William Green is giving a piano concert at the Public Library here, and he's doing 80s New Zealand composers 80s piano music, so I've got a little piece in there, just a little quirky piece. And then a Christchurch harpist is coming to do a concert next Sunday at the University of Music in Auckland. I've got a solo harp piece in there, but that's only minor compared to what's happening. There's lots of composers involved and lots happening.
Right. Well, that's great. Are you working on any compositions at the moment, or any commissions at the moment?
Yes, there's a Polish pianist that I'm writing a piece for. He wants a piece for international piano competition, so we're about to embark on that sort of thing. And I've just finished a piece that was setting a poem by Greg O'Brien. He's a New Zealand literary and visual artist, and that was just performed down in Wellington. And writing some music for a film that Bridget Quick's making about Kazu Nakagawa's work. He's a sculptor on the island, as you know.
Yeah.
And so that's slowly happening too. And also Greg O'Brien and I are beginning to talk about collaborating on a music theatre piece for the future. So it'll be a big project.
Yes.
And it'll be very exciting because he's a lovely person to work with too.
That's great. What sort of music do you like composing most?
Most
genre? Or what instruments do you like composing for?
I suppose my most favourite instruments for composing for are voice, strings and piano. That's what I was trained in as a performer earlier on, and that's what I sort of centre on. But I write for orchestra and ensemble and mixed vocal and ensemble pieces and some electroacoustic music and choral music and different, all sorts really. But that's, if you're asking my favourite, I guess that's...
Right.
The nucleus.
Tell us something about the composition that the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra played, The River of Ocean.
Okay. It kind of arose from a dream, actually, and of just our ephemerality and things. And it sounds, you can kind of hear the rolling waves of the Pacific in it. And at the beginning, because we were on this island, we all listened to the water at the where it interfaces with the sand, around the coast, mm-hmm. that sound. And when the piece opens, you can sort of hear that. That's, do you want to play just the beginning or something, and then we could, you could hear that?
Yes, well, okay. We might play that just going, so we can hear that.
Yeah.
So that the island life does inspire you, does it?
Well, I live here, so it has to.
That's right.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place. It's nature here that quite inspirational. There's another orchestra piece, Urwachst, that sort of relates to what I felt in native bush, sort of on the island here, and makes delight and things like that. I mean, they're all abstract pieces, but it's where you kind of dream up the piece or conceive it that you sort of remember, and that sort of relates to New Zealand bush, and so does the title. And anyway, I won't talk about that.
Was that one of the reasons you moved to the island, is to get inspiration, or was that coincidental?
No, it was kind of. Visiting here and falling in love with the beautiful, the natural kind of aspect of the place. It's a kind of a paradise, isn't it? And it's also got this amazing kind of international flavour that's happening now with people from all cultures living here, which is pretty fantastic.
Yes, that's happened sort of over the last 10 years or so, I think. Yeah, I've noticed the difference.
Yeah.
And can you explain a little bit for us about ethnomusicology?
The studying of music in different cultures. My ethnomusicology lecturer way back, it's a long time ago, Larry, was Alan Thomas, who has a house on the island, in fact. And basically it's a study of music in other cultures. And so that's what I was really interested in. I went back to university to do that. And that's affected my composition quite a lot, because often my pieces are influenced by music from other cultures. For instance, I just finished a piece called Summer Summer, which is a response to the Javanese saying Teramakasi, which means thank you, and Summer Summer, that's fine, that's okay. So I wrote a response to that response, and it's a piece for harp, viola, and flute.
Right.
And okay. And other pieces just, strictly influenced by natural things. Like, I've did a harp piece called Hee Hee, which means stitch bird, after a visit to Tiri Tiri Matangi.
Oh, excellent. And now, you also teach music on the island, don't you?
Yeah, I teach piano and theory and composition, but only one composition student.
Okay, and what age group do you teach?
From 6 to nearly 80.
Well, that's pretty good.
I'd quite like some more students.
Ah, well, there you go. Now, they come to you in Rocky Bay?
Yes, they do, and I also teach at the college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're all delightful. Every student is a gorgeous person. I love teaching them.
So if there's anybody out there who wants to take music lessons or composition lessons, they can contact Helen.
Theory.
And your phone number or contact details?
372-9724.
For Helen Bowater, who's a pianist or rather she's a teacher extraordinaire and a composer extraordinaire. And we're going to hear an excerpt from her composition River of Ocean that has been recorded by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. And we'll just set this up while I finish talking to Helen. And Helen, where to from here?
I just keep writing. I've got these different projects to do. I've got about 4 or 5 I can see in the future. There's never more than that. It's always living for the moment. And,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're waiting for the next commission.
No, I'm just writing.
Good for you.
But there is something coming, I think.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for coming in. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Jen.
A pleasure.
Who was my near neighbour?
Oh, exactly. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Now let's hear a little of this wonderful composition, River of Ocean. Thank you. that wonderful composition is called Oceans of Sound. River of Ocean by Helen Bowater. We've been talking to Helen, and I'm sure you thoroughly enjoyed that. Part of New Zealand Music Month.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
And now it's my pleasure to say hi to Denise Roach.
Oh, good morning.
And how are you this morning, Denise?
Oh, actually, I'm pretty good.
That's good.
Just having a little bit of rain has perked me up no end.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Three cheers to those people who went out there and did a rain dance. I think that was last night, or maybe it's tonight. I mean, we could do with some more, so...
Yeah, you know. I'm looking at buying my third lot of water, actually, if we don't get some pretty soon.
Oh, my goodness.
No, we're not...
That's
a
bit scary.
Yeah, we're not profligate with the, with the water or anything, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, well, when you've got teenagers and, you know, yeah. and men in the house, it does, you do need more water, don't you?
You do.
Okay, well, basically we're here today to talk about the meeting tomorrow that WICOS and yourself have set up to talk about social services and the impact that the super city is going to have on that. Am I right in that sort of
You're totally
assessment?
Right. It's another submission process, which I know we're all really fed up with it. But what happened was the Royal Commission, when they made their recommendations about how the super city should work, they had a whole structure for the city to deal with those who are most disadvantaged, a whole strata of people who could be involved in looking at how to address inequality across the different regions and, well, across the different communities in the region. And that kind of got mixed or it kind of got overlooked during the process, the legal process to set up the super cities. So it didn't go unnoticed. And as a result, a whole bunch of social policy practitioners across the city got together, organised a conference called Pass and Go, which was held in November last year. And that basically led to the Minister for Social Development and Employment, Paula Bennett, saying, oh, well, maybe we should have a social policy forum for Auckland, which is where you get, her idea for that is you get cabinet ministers and the mayor and the mayor's choice of councillors to basically highlight the big issues of inequality across the region and then do action points to try and address them. Now, it's a great idea to get the minister in the room with local government, but there are I've got some issues about, you know, how does that trickle down to communities? How do communities trickle up to that high-level forum? So tomorrow, the idea is that we get together and we have a chat about it because it's kind of gone below the radar for most people. And you know, we've got some serious inequality issues here on Waiheke that we'd like to have addressed.
I think that's one of the misconceptions about Waiheke, that quite often when they do surveys about the socioeconomics of Auckland or whatever, that we're down there as a lower decile area.
Well, we've got a huge number of beneficiaries. I think the last stats I looked at, which I think were a few years ago, it was something like 50% of our residents were on a fixed income. We've got a lot of retirees, and that takes them into account.
Mm. Yes, that's right, because I think the public perception is Waiheke is full of millionaires and wealthy people, and it's not necessarily the case.
No, it isn't. And you don't actually want a community that is just full of millionaires, because then who does the cleaning?
Yes, indeed, indeed.
What we want is a community that, you know, covers all demographics, but where everybody has equal access to services and the ability to, to earn a decent living.
So what is the purpose of the meeting tomorrow?
The purpose of the meeting tomorrow is to highlight that this is happening, and hopefully we'll get some people making some submissions as a result. From my point of view, and also for WICOS, it's also the opportunity for us to hear from you know, people at the meeting, what they think we should be putting in our submission. How do they think the new super city should be addressing social disadvantage and social disadvantage in our community?
Right. Is this associated? Well, I think there was a meeting last week, Thursday or Friday of last week, of a group that was put together with the minister and or by the minister, whatever, the high powered group. Is that the high powered group you're talking about? That it's sort of a council of appointees from different areas and
no,
it's a different
there, there was a regional. What has happened is that an Auckland policy network is being set up. Which is a combination across the region of not-for-profit organisations, because they're left out of that high-level conversation completely. Mm. And so the not-for-profit sector, which includes the Council of Social Services, are saying, well, if we get our act together and organise ourselves into a, you know, one voice, then we're better placed to put pressure on that high-level forum to, because they're the ones that are, you know, at the bottom of the cliff with the ambulances a lot of the time. Places like the City Mission, which are dealing with homelessness every day, they're the ones that have the expertise in how do we, you know, how do we fix poverty for a start.
Mm. And what is your hope for the outcome for Waiheke on these issues?
Well, I was going to say world peace and, you know, fair deal for everyone.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, yeah. Well, it is May Day.
Yes, we can dream.
But from the meeting tomorrow, what I hope is that we'll get a lot more people interested in what's happening and put pressure, and through these submissions, start putting pressure on the minister to say, well, communities need to have a voice and we need to be able to influence that forum so that we can get a fair share of the resources addressed to us. There's $12 billion spent across the Auckland region in social services, and that includes health initiatives, housing benefits, public health issues. Yeah, so I mean, how that money is spent does need a bit more kind of thinking around how it can be spent more effectively. And when you've got kind of like the council doing a little bit and central government doing a little bit and they're not necessarily talking to each other, then we want to be able to have some influence over what they decide.
Mm. I think that was, from memory, the way that the Health Trust first came into being was lobbying on the angle that if the money was given in bulk to the community, it would be more wisely spent and more people would benefit than if it was just piecemeal.
That's right. It's that centralisation doesn't necessarily work for people. It does work for insects, but doesn't necessarily work for people. And the Health Trust is a fantastic example of a community response to a dire need. There's 198 community organisations on this island. Yeah, I know. So if you consider the number of volunteers who are out there doing things for the benefit and the health of all our people, then it's quite phenomenal. Waiheke is quite unusual like that.
It certainly is. And you know, I've often thought that if anybody's bored on the island, they've only got themselves to blame. There's got to be something for everyone, even if you're not a committee person.
That's right. Well, they did do... there was a youth needs assessment done last year, I think, and so there are some gaps there, particularly for youth. And if youth are left alone and not, you know, not given the opportunities that perhaps we should be giving them, then we get a rise in crime and alcohol-related violence and, you know, all those sort of things. So that's one social issue that we need to be looking at a bit more closely as well.
Mm, but the initiative has to come from them, from the kids, as to what they want, how they'd like to do things.
Absolutely, but there's a role there for resources being put towards it.
Well, the skateboard parks are...
Yeah.
Isn't that a success story?
It is a success story, and it will be more successful too once it's upgraded. I mean, it's been a long process to get it this far, and it might take it a little bit longer, but there's a huge will in the, you know, from all sorts of different people in the community. community who are really keen to get it up and running. And the community board, Tony Sears particularly, have really been pushing this as far and as fast as we can. But it's, oh God, it takes time.
It sure does, yes. What was that wonderful ad that Rachel Hunter was in? You know, it won't happen overnight, but it will happen.
Yeah, I'll just do a hair flick here.
Now, the social services that on the island that you want to get more funding for or resources for through the, well, with the super city, what sort of social services are you looking at? I mean, is it resourcing things that are already here, like the Red Cross and, you know, Meals on Wheels and things like that, or is it a different structure?
Well, those are the things that we really need to be looking at. We know that housing is a big issue. Secure, healthy, affordable housing is a really big issue for low-paid workers and people on fixed incomes. And every winter, the health services see the effects of what unhealthy, you know, uninsulated homes do to people on who are struggling to make ends meet. We also know that transport is another issue, and housing and transport are issues that are shared across the region with various communities struggling to address those kind of things. For us here on the island, the cost of ferries has a real impact on people's earning capacity. If you can't afford, or if you can only get a job in town that's low paid, and it doesn't make sense to spend most of your income travelling. So ferries and the cost of travelling is a barrier, and it can be a barrier to people's choices. You know, it's not just about jobs; it's about whether they're able to afford to study. The Gold Card has been fantastic because that's actually taken a bit of pressure off our senior people, so that they can travel into town and not have to pay for the ferry when they have to go to hospital, for example.
Mm. It's a pity the government couldn't have a similar scheme for students.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are, you know, reductions and stuff like that that Fuller's offer, but again, it's a significant part of people's income going on travel.
Mm, absolutely. But then I suppose people would argue we choose to live here and we live with that, the consequences of that.
We do.
Yep. But however, the social service thing here, when you're asking people to come along to this meeting tomorrow, you're wanting input from them as to which issues they think are the most important.
Yep, absolutely.
Where the gaps are.
Where are the gaps? And I'm thinking we'll probably get a lot of people who are already active in social services across the island coming along tomorrow, because they're the ones that are kind of most interested. Because I have to say, it's really hard to get any excitement around it, because it does seem so, another bureaucratic thing that we have to do, and as we build the architecture that will become our new city.
Mm.
And people are, and I include myself in this, are just a bit submissioned out. I'm fed up with it, frankly.
Yes, exactly. And I think some people have got a bit cynical about it all too, thinking, oh, well, the decisions have already been made and what we say isn't going to be taken into account anyway.
Yeah, I think there is that viewpoint, but the problem with that is that if you say nothing, then they say, well, we must be doing the right thing.
Mm.
So do the right thing and come along and make a submission tomorrow.
Exactly. The other thing with the submissions, I think, that people don't always realise is that it's not necessarily submitting against something, but submitting for something that you think is working well. And I think most people sort of think of submissions as being you put one in if you're against something.
Yeah. No, these... I mean, the Minister's been pretty clear. She wants ideas on how it can work better. And I've got lots of ideas about that. The forum, just being quite an exclusive group, doesn't strike me as being accountable or necessarily on the right track. So I'd like some checks and balances in there. That's something I'll be suggesting. Mm. Other people may have other suggestions.
So people can come along knowing that it's a proactive, positive thing that is being driven by the Minister.
Yeah.
and that she's specifically asked for. So, you know, if we don't get in there and tell her what we want, we've only got ourselves to blame.
Absolutely.
And for once, you know, this is a positive side of things rather than a battering our head against a wall.
That's right. I mean, I think it's the start, it's a step in the right direction, getting, you know, local government and central government together so that there's not a, you know, so that $12 billion is spent wisely and there's not the kind of double spending or double ignoring. You know, I think that could work quite well.
Well, it sounds like a worthwhile thing to get involved with, that we need to let the minister know what Waiheke wants in the way of social services, where the gaps are, where the needs most lie. And to do that, we need to put in a submission.
That's right. So I'll be on hand. I've got Neil Miller coming over tomorrow to be a guest speaker. He was one of the organisers for the Pass and Go conference and is one of the architects of the Auckland Policy Network. Policy just, you know, sounds really dull, but actually he's a very exciting person. And
He looks rather gorgeous from the photograph in the marketplace. Here's a reason to go.
Yeah,
nothing else.
I have to say, those blue eyes are pretty penetrating, aren't they?
He's hard to heck with PC. Yeah. So the meeting is tomorrow, Sunday, May the 2nd, at Surfdale Hall.
At 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Great. And if you need more information beforehand, you can contact Denise on 372-6578.
Yep, just don't ring at lunchtime. I've got people over.
Fair enough. Or, you know, in the middle of the night or something. You know, when it suddenly strikes you.
I'm fine. You can ring me on 6578 anytime within reason.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Denise, for coming in, and good luck with tomorrow.
Thank you.
Now it's my pleasure to say hi to Steve from the Waiheke Soccer Club. Is that what it's called, Steve, or is it the Waiheke Football Club?
Good morning, everyone. It is Waiheke United, formerly Waiheke Soccer Club, but it's now Waiheke United, AFC. It was incorporated last year, so it's a legal society, and the club is really thriving.
That's great, and you're affiliated with the Auckland AFC, are you?
Yes, we're affiliated with Auckland Football or Soccer 2, which is central Auckland all the way down south to the Bombays.
Excellent. Now, when I was doing a very a small amount of research this morning on the soccer, and I got out the marketplace, and there's a whole page 30 of soccer results, and I thought, they can't possibly all be Waiheke teams, but apparently they are.
Yes, they are. We have a very thriving junior club, starting from the academy, which is age 5 through to 8, and that's played up every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 up at the Onitangi Sports Park. And today, this morning, we had 27 kids, and we're still looking for young kids to come along and start the soccer experience, so that's where they start. And it's all about just having fun and getting used to playing with other kids and forming a team spirit.
That's great. So if there are any mums and dads with littlies out there who might want to get involved, do they just come along on a Saturday morning, or do they need to contact somebody first?
They can just come along on Saturday morning, probably turn up 15 minutes before 10 o'clock and introduce themselves to either Andy or Simon.
Okay, and there is a quite a large ad on page 30 of the marketplace that gives you some contact details there, some email addresses, and on online Waiheke United registration. Now, I gather you're a little bit short with your senior team, is that right?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more of a picture. We have 8 junior teams, ranging from 10 through to 17. And all those teams are full, and that part of the club is thriving. We're in a bit of a rebuild this year, and the senior men's team, we had 2 last year, an open grade Champions League and an over 35 team, but we've lost a number of players to the city because of the island economy, so, you know, people are moving off to the city to find work, and we've lost a number of key players, so therefore we only have 1 men's team this year. and we're struggling for players. So if there's any senior men out there aged from 18 through to 35, 40, whatever, and you're still wanting to keen to play and able to play, contact the football club via the website. There is a number of people that you can talk to there. So it's waihekiunited.org.nz is our website.
Right. Okay. And do you need any helpers, like managers, coaches, backroom people?
We've got a large number of supporters and volunteers this year, so it's been really great. We are still missing a few key spots. The two areas we're looking for coaching are a senior men's team coach and the senior women's team coach. And the women's team are truly dedicated. They play on a Sunday, and they're just looking for somebody to help them out with the drills, and also from the senior men's point of view as well, drills and coaching. And then from a committee point of view, we've got a few spots on the committee that we would like to have. We're always looking for committee members that are able to volunteer their time, and you know, we're pretty organised, so we'll delegate or assign you a certain job within the club.
How often does the committee meet?
They meet once a month, and it's usually for an hour and a half, and it's normally on the first Tuesday or the first Wednesday. We rotate it around from month to month because not everyone can make a Tuesday or a Wednesday night.
Right, and what sort of commitment is there for the coaching side of things?
Coaching is one training session, typically on a Wednesday night. The senior men and women train on the same day, so it's Wednesday at 6:30 down at the Only Tang Sports Park for an hour and a half.
Right, and what about the young ones? How often do they train?
All the different teams, the youth grades, 10th through to 17, train once a week, and that varies either Tuesday night or a Wednesday night or a Thursday night, depending on the coach's availability. And then up at the park on Saturday, every second week, we have all the teams playing at home, which is different to years gone by. And they're up at the park right now, and then in a fortnight's time, they'll be back again. And it was so busy up there, people were having to park on the side of the road around the middle. So there's lots of people up there, and it's really creating a very warm and, I guess, enthusiastic club feeling. So
yeah, it's
really
a good
great.
Buzz up there, actually. Yeah. I think today the rugby was supposed to have a back-to-back games too, but I'm not sure whether the
yes,
first
they were
game
up there, so we're all so fighting for space.
Yeah, right. So, and you have a good working relationship with each other, hopefully.
Yes, we have. We've built some strength there.
That's great. Now, has the World Soccer Cup this year made an impact on membership or interest in the game?
Hard to say. I think in general, all the players that have been playing over the years are really looking forward to the World Cup, and it is on the lips and mouths of all the kids, and they're following it very, very closely, and there's a good amount of excitement there. I think there probably are a few other kids that have joined in because of that, and it helps us to recruit, yes, for sure.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Steve, and we wish you all the best for the season, which has just started, no doubt. And what about sponsorship? It must be an awful lot
yes.
of costs there with so many teams to get to Auckland. And
yes, we have two or three wonderful sponsors. The first one is Fuller's. They give us some wonderful discounts for the tickets for teams coming and also our home teams going away off island. So without them, the additional cost to play football would be, in some cases, prohibitive. So with their support, it makes it a lot more comfortable for parents. So we thank them very much. And then we have the Marketplace, which gives us great coverage and also advertising. And we're building a very good partnership with them. And the Lazy Lounge has been a long-term partner. And they also encourage after-match functions with the senior team, so it's been a great partnership. We're always looking for additional sponsors, so if you're interested, give me a call on 9660 And if you want to find out more about the club, visit our website, waihikiunited.org.nz.
That's great. Thank you, Steve. Just to give you Steve's number again, that's 372-9660. If you want to sponsor or help out in any other way with the Waiheke
United Soccer Club.
Soccer club. Not football club, but soccer club. Good luck, Steve.
Thank you
very
much.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihikiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirua.